Dhyanam namaskritya nanam cheva narottamam devim saraswatim vyasam tato jayam udirayat. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 2, chapter entitled Daksha Curses Lord Shiva, text number 33. Maitreya uvarcha.
Maitreya uvarcha.
Tashevam vadata sharpam.
Tashevam vadata sharpam.
Brigosa bhagavan bhava.
Brigosa bhagavan bhava.
Nishchakrama tata kinchid.
Nishchakrama tata kinchid.
Vimana eva sanuga.
Vimana eva sanuga.
Maitreya uvarcha.
Maitreya uvarcha.
Maitreya said.
Maitreya said.
Tasya.
Tasya.
Of him.
Of him.
Evam.
Evam.
Thus.
Thus.
Vadata.
Vadata.
Being spoken.
Being spoken.
Shapam.
Shapam.
Curse.
Curse.
Brigo.
Brigo.
Of Brigu.
Of Brigu.
Saha.
Saha.
He.
He.
Bhagavan.
Bhagavan.
The possessor of all opulences.
The possessor of all opulences.
Pava.
Pava.
Lord Shiva.
Lord Shiva.
Nishchakrama.
Nishchakrama.
Went.
Left.
Tata.
Tata.
From there.
From there.
Kinchit.
Kinchit.
Somewhat.
Somewhat.
Vimana.
Vimana.
Morose.
Morose.
Eva,
Eva,
as
Sa'anuga,
Sa'anuga, followed by his disciples.
Followed by his disciples.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The sage Maitreya said, when such cursing and counter-cursing was going on between Lord Shiva's followers and the parties of Daksha and Brigu, Lord Shiva became very morose, not saying anything. He left the arena of the sacrifice, followed by his disciples. Translation responsively. The sage Maitreya said,
the sage Maitreya said,
when such cursing and counter-cursing,
when such cursing and counter-cursing
was going on,
was going on
between Lord Shiva's followers,
between Lord Shiva's followers
and the parties of Daksha and Brigu,
and the parties of Daksha and Brigu,
Lord Shiva became very morose.
Lord Shiva became very morose.
Not saying anything.
Not saying anything.
He left the arena of the sacrifice.
He left the arena of the sacrifice.
Followed by his disciples.
Followed by his disciples.
Purport. Here, Lord Shiva's excellent character is described. In spite of the cursing and counter-cursing between the parties of Daksha and Shiva, because he is the greatest Vaishnava, he was so sober that he did not say anything. A Vaishnava is always tolerant, and Lord Shiva is considered the topmost Vaishnava, so his character, as shown in this scene, is excellent. He became morose because he knew that these people, both his men and Daksha's, were unnecessarily cursing and counter-cursing one another, without any interest in spiritual life. From his point of view, he did not see anyone as lower or higher, because he is a Vaishnava. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 5.18, Pandit Sama Darshina, one who is perfectly learned does not see anyone lesser or greater, because he sees everyone from the spiritual platform. Thus, the only alternative left to Lord Shiva was to leave in order to stop his follower, Nandishwara, as well as Bhrigu Muni, from cursing and counter-cursing in that way. Amigyan timanandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurunulitam jena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobhishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam tadati swa patantikam pancha kaupata rubyascha kripa sindhu pyevacha pititanam pavanebhyo vaishna vibhyo namo namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare
Hare Rama
Hare Rama Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare It's an important part of the Bhagavatam. This part of the Bhagavatam is repeated again and again. As we go through the Bhagavatam again and again, we see that certain key elements or certain key lessons are brought about again and again. The nature of the people, especially in Kali Yuga, is that they're very dull. They don't remember things very well. It says that in the first canto of the Bhagavatam. It says, short memory. Just like we say to you, you know, go and do that. And then you'll come back the next day and you'll say, oh, what was that? Or even you'll come back 5 minutes later and you'll say, oh, what was that? The nature of Kali Yuga, people don't remember things very easily. Whereas, previously, in the previous yugas, people were called Shruti Dara. Shruti Dara means you hear something once and you can remember it eternally, actually. Like it says Narada, Narada is Shruti Dara. He just hears things. Just like people, they read the Bhagavatam and they can just remember it. You read it once and you remember it forever. That is not there so much at this point in time. In Kali Yuga, everything deteriorates, including the memory. That's why we have books. Now we have iPad. And we have iPhone. And we have all of these different things. Because if we don't have them, then what takes place? We can't remember. So we need all these things. These are like replacements for our memory at this point in time. So previously people remembered. These days people don't remember very well. One of the reasons why we don't remember things is because of illicit sex. Because when one engages in illicit sex, then the brain becomes deteriorated in potency. By relinquishing or discharging the vital fluids of the body, the semen and the women's discharge, that ojas or that potency within the body, which normally makes the brain fertile, it deteriorates, and then people's memory also deteriorates. So in this day and age, most people are engaged in illicit sex. So therefore, the fertility of the brain is deteriorating. Moment by other reasons also. But this is one of the important reasons. That's why one who practices brahmacharya strictly, his brain becomes very fertile. And Prabhupada noticed this. There was, I think, around about 1972 or so, and Prabhupada took his disciples to India. And Prabhupada was traveling with about 40 disciples. And everyone got sick. Even these days, you go to India, it's difficult. You can get sick easily. But especially back then, there was not a lot of facility. So people got sick. And all of Prabhupada's disciples got sick. Only one disciple didn't get sick. And that was Bhanu Swami. Because Bhanu Swami is a Naishtika Brahmachari. He never discharged his semen his whole life. And Prabhupada said, just see Naishtika. Because Naishtika is potent, has strength. Body is strong. Brain is like, you know, Bhanu Swami's brain is like... it's like a... Yeah, how many gigabyte? Yeah, you speak to Maharaj, he's just like, he's pulling things in. I think from other places in the universe when you speak to him. It's like, just like, you know, it all comes in and chokes it. So this makes the memory very strong. But the memory becomes deteriorated in Kali Yuga. And then we become weakened when our brain becomes infertile. Right? And then people, they cannot remember things very easily. So the Bhagavatam, like everything, you have to repeat things in order for things to go into our consciousness. That's why the Bhagavatam itself says, Nicham Bhagavata Sevaya. Nicham is symbolic. What does Nicham mean? Andreas, what does Nicham mean? Nicham means regularly. Actually means eternally. Eternally or regularly means all the time or every day. Nityam. So when the Bhagavatam says Nityam, the Bhagavata, Sevaya, actually symbolically it means we should hear the Bhagavatam every day. Nityam means regularly or every day you need to hear Bhagavatam. Okay, so you can't go to a Bhagavatam class every day because of your lifestyle. You know, maybe you're a grihastha. You know, see, some grihasthas are sitting here with their babies on their lap. They're so determined to come to the Bhagavatam class. They're sitting there with the baby on the lap because we will be there at the Bhagavatam class. But for most, not most, but many, it is not possible to go. That's why now, you know, Melbourne has some of the best technology when it comes to audio and visual. Like, people can watch it live right now. You know, people can actually watch it. You know, sometimes you give class and some devotee comes up to you later in the day and he says, oh, nice class, like that. And you say, oh, okay, you were there. He goes, yeah, I was watching it all. Or many people are listening right now, right? So this kind of nityam Bhagavad, it means if you can't be in the class, you must hear every day. Just like every day I get up in the morning. I've been doing it for many years. First thing I do, I learned from my Guru Maharaj. He used to do this. First thing I do, I get up in the morning and go to the bathroom, you know, to scrape my tongue and brush my teeth and, you know, perform ablutions, cleanse oneself. First thing I do, I just turn on the... Now it's like an MP3 thing. You know, back in those days, it was a tape recorder, like a little box thing. You know, but now, over the years, it changes. You know, one breaks down, and then you have to update. Now it's all like a digital kind of, it's a little box thing. But first thing I do, I turn on the lecture in the morning, right? And on average, it takes me from when I get up until when I'm fully dressed, it takes me about 40 minutes. I'm slow, you know, which is fortunate because it means I can listen, right, for 40 minutes, right? And then Nicham Bhagavata Sevaya. So okay, where I live, I can't go to a Bhagavatam class live every day. You know, that facility is not there, but every day. Now, you must hear. Days should not go by where you're not reading the Bhagavatam or you're not hearing the Bhagavatam, where you're not absorbing yourself in Krishna Katha. So Nityam Bhagavata Seva means regularly. You must always hear. The Bhagavatam says, or the Bhagavatam points out, the original conversation is between Shukadeva Goswami and Maharaj. When you hear about Krishna, right, that makes your chanting fertile. When you chant about Krishna, that makes your hearing about Krishna potent. Right? So we need both. Right? And when you work this out, you elevate in Krishna consciousness very rapidly, very quickly. We have to work out the basics. When I joined the temple, first night I walked into the temple, I'd never met a devotee, actually. Right? The only contact I'd had with Prabhupada's movement was a book. I'd never met a Hare Krishna. But I read the book and I thought, I want to be a Hare Krishna, just by reading the book. So then I came to the temple. And then I spoke to the temple president, Balaram Prabhu, who was the TP back then. And he said to me, I spoke to him for about an hour. And he said, are you chanting? And I said, chanting what? He said, are you chanting Hare Krishna? Because I read Coming Back, but I didn't read the 8th chapter or the last chapter. The last chapter tells you to chant I only read the first, I never clicked on. So he said, are you chanting? I said, no, what chant do you want? He said, Hare Krishna. And I said, so he gave me beads, gave me the mantra, said chant. So I started chanting every day. I think, yeah, from that day on, I started chanting. So I'd been living in that, and then I moved straight into the temple. Right? I didn't really have a lot of background knowledge. I hadn't associated with devotees. I just had some shraddha or some faith that this is what I want to do. Right? I was attracted to Krishna's internal energy. So then I moved into the temple. And I remember I'd been in the temple for about 2 months. And every day, you know, I was doing what everyone does. Get up for Mangal Aarti and chanting and doing seva at crossways and doing all these things. And then one day I was walking past the fish pond and one devotee was going around the fish pond, you know, chanting. And I looked at him and he was chanting very attentively, very deeply. And then in my consciousness somehow I clicked on or I picked up. I thought, yeah, this is the process. This is what it's about. You have to chant very nicely. And then from that day I started chanting more attentively, more attentively, more attentively. So when we work out what the process is and what the dynamic is in Krishna consciousness, that is when we begin to elevate. And you can elevate very rapidly. This process is extremely powerful. Rupa Goswami says there are five principal angas of bhakti. What are the five principal angas? Out of what he says, there's 64, and then he gets to the end, and then he repeats five of them. Yeah, what are they? Yeah, hearing.
Living in the holy
dharma. Living in the dharma. Yeah.
Associating with devotees.
Chanting, very good. And worshipping the deity. Yeah. Bhagavat Shravan, Nam Kirtan, Sadhu Sangam, Srimurti, Shradaya Sevan, and Mathura Bhash. These are the five. Rupa Goswami says the five of them are so potent, they can even, he says, even one of them, if practiced sincerely, can take you to the level of bhava, which is the eighth level of perfection, very quickly, rapidly. This process is so powerful. The only reason we're not advancing quickly is because we're not applying the process properly. That's the only reason. The process is like a rocket ship. That's what it's actually like. It is so powerful, the process of Krishna consciousness. We could become pure devotees, you know, by, you know, 8:32. If we were serious, yeah, there isn't a limitation here. The only limitation is that we are lazy, right? And we're not serious about the process. Actually, we're not serious enough about the process. That's why. That's why it's taking so long. And sometimes we think, oh, it's taking so long, I'm not progressing. It's just that. It's us. It's the improper application of the process. The process itself is perfect and powerful. And can take, Rupa Goswami says, it can take you to bhava rapidly. Right? Bhava means where you have emotions for Krishna. Bhava means when you realize your constitutional position in relationship to Krishna. Right? It can take you there rapidly. Right? So, we have to understand the dynamic. Right? So, our chanting, because the whole process is about chanting, right? The Yuga Dharma is Nam Sankirtan. But the process of chanting becomes powerful when we hear. Right? So, when you hear about Krishna, your chanting becomes fertile. In the beginning, when you chant, in the beginning, the instruction Prabhupada gave us was just hear. But it's interesting, if you read Prabhupada's instructions on chanting, that's not the only thing Prabhupada said. Sometimes we say Prabhupada said just hear, and then it's like that was the final. Like a, you could say almost like a movie. You know, you're chanting, and then you're seeing Krishna's pastimes taking place. That's why it's called Ashta Kaliya Lila Smaranam. Right? These eightfold daily pastimes, according to the time of day, you know, like now is 10 past 8, right? So what is Krishna doing now in terms of Ashtakali Lila? Right now, he is in Nandagram, right? According to his pastimes, he is in Nandagram in the spiritual world. And he is taking his breakfast, which has been cooked by Srimati Radharani, right? And is being served by Mother Yashoda, Mother Rohini, And Radharani is also assisting. So you could be chanting right now and you could be meditating, seeing the pastime or meditating on the pastime. Right? That's advanced chanting. Most of us are just trying to stay awake while chanting. And most of the chanting, sometimes in the morning you're watching everyone chanting japa and Dorothy's like, how do you get it? That kind of chanting is not going to take you to Goloka Vrindavan. That kind of chanting will take you to Crossways, okay. That could be true. Mom Mohanprabhu has a lot of realizations. So. That could be true. I don't know if it necessarily takes you to Crossways, but it could. It could take you to Crossways. But you're definitely not going to get to Goloka Vrindavan. You're not going to get back to Krishna's pastimes.
It gives you service.
Yeah, it gives you service.
Crossways is service.
Yeah.
And that service gives you that.
Yeah, that's true.
It's your liberation.
That's true. That's true. But the point is that if we do chant inattentively, you won't go to a high destination. Right? It's a scientific process. That's why Prabhupada says on the front cover of the Nectar of Devotion, what is the subtitle? Right? It says Nectar of Devotion, and then underneath, what's the line?
The science of bhakti
yoga. Yeah, the science of bhakti yoga. Yeah, that's what the subtitle is. The science of science. Science means you have to have all the elements within the experiment to make the experiment work. Right? Otherwise, the experiment doesn't work. Right? So if your chanting is not supported by sufficient hearing about Krishna, you won't get the result. You don't get the prima donna, or the goal of chanting. Similarly, if you are reading and hearing about Krishna but not chanting properly, you won't get realizations. Right? The two are completely interconnected. So therefore, we're being told here, nityam bhagavata sevaya, you must hear the Bhagavatam regularly, every day. So you listen to lectures or however you do it, but you must hear every day. So, by hearing every day, we hear the instructions again and again and again. Now it's interesting because this pastime is the beginning of the fourth canto. Chapters 1 to 7 are basically the pastime of the Daksha Jagya. This is a very famous and important pastime of the Bhagavatam. Now, if you study the Bhagavatam categorically, systematically, and we should study it categorically and systematically, right? Prabhupada said you can pick up any of his books and they're like an apple, right? So you pick up an apple, you can bite it there or you can bite it there, it's sweet, right? So an apple is sweet, it doesn't matter which direction you take from. So Prabhupada said you can pick up any book. You can go over to the bookshelf, you can pick up Bhagavad Gita, Nectar of Devotion, fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, Majji Leela, chapter 7. It doesn't matter where you pick it up, you'll get sweetness. Right? But the point is that Prabhupada says, at some point in your life, you must study his books systematically, scientifically. Because there's a reason why it's spoken the way it's spoken. The Bhagavatam is not haphazardly spoken. Right, it was very systematic. Right, Shukadeva Goswami was leading us in a very systematic way to the goal, which is the 10th canto, which is the Ashraya. Right, but it's spoken in a very systematic way. And then you get to the Ashraya, and then canto 10 finishes, and then he says, okay, there's more to be said. Right, and then he says, 11th canto. Right, Burujan Prabhu has just written a book, a commentary on canto 11 and 12. And I think he's called the book Glancing Back at his lotus feet or something like that, Glancing Back. Because once you get past the 10th canto, right, there's a revision of everything which was spoken previously. That's canto 11. And then canto 12 is like, it gives, how do you call it? Revelations. Or predictions. That's how Shastras finish. They give predictions of what will take place in the future. Canto 12 says, this is what will happen in Kali Yuga. You'll see this take place in the future. So, This pastime, Daksha Yagya, it's an important pastime. What's the main lesson to be learned in these seven chapters of the Daksha Yagya? What's that?
Humility.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Yeah, very good. That's good. Humility. Well, what's the main topic? Yeah, Vaishnava Aparad. Right? It's Vaishnava Aparad. Now, why is it? This is said again and again and again as we go through the Bhagavatam. Because we are dull-minded. We forget things very easily in Kali Yuga. Therefore, the Bhagavatam has to say again, don't commit offences to devotees. And then later on, don't commit offences to devotees. And then again it says, don't commit offences to devotees. Right? It's all the way through it. Right? Because it is one of the principal subject matters of the Bhagavatam. It's one of the principal subject matters of spiritual life. Now, if you commit offences, you're not going to progress. So you might be hearing a lot. You might be chanting a lot. Right? But it's like rowing the boat, right? Mm-hmm. And the anchor's out. Right? So you're like powering along. And you know, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, he gave that analogy or that pastime of the wedding party. So all night, you know. They were going for a wedding. So everyone jumped in the boat. So we'll row up the Ganges all night, and then next morning we'll be there where the wedding is. So everyone jumped in, the whole family, everyone went to sleep. Someone stayed up and rowed all night, you know, but someone forgot to take the anchor out. So the sun came up in the morning, and they're still sitting there, and they're like, oh, yeah, we didn't get to where we're going. So basically you could say that's Vaishnava Aparad. Right? You may be doing so much service, right? You might be hearing and chanting a lot, but if you're offending devotees, right, it's like having the anchor. You're not really progressing. Not really. In one sense you are. Nothing is lost. But on another level, you won't get prema done. Right? And Lord Chaitanya, in his pastimes, particularly in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, right, he mentions this, and it's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita as well, he calls this hatimata. Means he gives a whole analogy. He says this is hatimata. Hatimata means mad elephant offense. Right? There's different types of offenses, but a mad elephant offense, that's a big offense. Right? That can do much more damage than smaller offenses. Right? And he said that Vaishnava Bharata is hatimata, which means the elephant went mad. Right? He gives the analogy. He says that bhakti, your devotional service, is like a creeper. Bhakti lata, which means a creeper, like a vine which grows up. And then he says that the water is shravanadi, which means hearing and chanting. That is the water. How do you make your bhakti grow? Yeah, you water it with hearing and chanting about Krishna, and then your bhakti grows. And then he says you have to put a fence around a plant, around a creeper. So the fence is sadhu sangha. It is association with devotees. When you're with devotees, it keeps you protected. So you don't make mistakes. When you're doing something, devotees say, hey, that's incorrect. You're doing the wrong thing here. That's why you need to be around devotees. When you're by yourself, you can make mistakes. Devotees will always correct you. They'll keep you. But then he says, even you've got a nice fence, right, and even your plant's going very nice, but if a mad elephant comes in, doesn't really mean anything. Right? Your fence is gone. You see, no, if an elephant comes in here now mad, right, you'll see things will get wrecked. You know, all the nice garden, everything, the trees, the biggest trees here, they'll just pull them out and smash them and everything will be wrecked. Right? And everyone will walk out after class and they go, what happened? Oh, the elephant went mad. So that's the power of committing Vaishnava Aparad. It is so therefore the Bhagavatam says again and again and again, you have to be careful. Right. And this particular pastime, it's probably the most famous and important pastime on this topic in the Bhagavatam. Right. It's extremely, how would you say, instructive, no, extremely powerful. And who is the pastime? Who it is surrounding? Who is the main actor in the pastime? And a couple of the main actors. There's basically Daksha and Shiva. Daksha is one of the main actors, but the main personality to watch in this pastime is Shiva. And it's interesting, because even as devotees, and I've heard devotees say this over the years, sometimes they say, they misquote this pastime. And they say, oh, this one acted like that, and that one acted, no. Just watch Lord Shiva. Right? If you want to understand how to get through life, because in this material world, there will always be conflict. Always. Especially in Kali Yuga, because it's the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. So even if you're a very, a very mild and peaceful person, still there will be conflict. There will be criticism. There will be difficulties. That's the nature of the material energy. Right? People will come and they'll say unpleasant things about you. Right? They may be true, and sometimes they may not be true. But they will come. You can't avoid these things in this material world. So we need to learn how to deal with it. Because it will come. Right? Krishna will send the tests. Yeah, even recently, one devotee who is very close to me, I said something, and it was taken the wrong way. And it took me about a week to rectify the situation and to communicate to this devotee. You can probably guess which devotee I'm speaking about. Right? To communicate to this devotee that I did not mean what I had said like that. But the devotee took offense. And the offense was not intended, but it was there. So therefore, we have to be very careful how we deal with these things. Spiritually, that's why Prabhupada says it is like a razor's edge. I heard Prabhupada giving a lecture the other day or somewhere, and Prabhupada was speaking. Prabhupada, he was saying this point. He said, spiritual life is like a razor's edge. You're just shaving in the next minute. If you're not attentive, then problem. So in spiritual life, it's like that. Sometimes you say something, you don't mean it, but then suddenly the devotee is offended and it becomes like grows into something. So you have to monitor and rectify these things very quickly. And if it's happening to us, that we're the ones that are being criticized, the first thing we do, if you're ever criticized by anyone, the first thing we do, we take a step back and we look at ourselves. There must be a grain of truth in it. Bhakti Tirtha Swami, who is my Shiksha guru, he taught these things. Right? He taught us that whenever someone criticizes you, the first thing you do, you look at yourself. Right? You don't walk around and say, well, what do we usually do? What's the most common reaction in the material world? Someone says something, you say, well, what about you? That's the famous line. Well, what about you? And what did you do? Like that. So, okay, you can do that like that. We've been doing that for lifetimes. That's how we deal with conflict and criticism in this material world. That's the most common way people do. But if you do like that, you won't progress. Right? So we have to learn. And you can only learn to do this when your consciousness becomes situated in sattva-gun. Sattva-gun means you have to cultivate the mode of goodness. If we're too tamasic and too ignorant in our consciousness and too rajasic, too passionate in our consciousness, it's not possible to do this. But when you elevate yourself more to a sattva plane, more to the mode of goodness, then when someone criticizes us, the first thing we do is step back, become a little quiet, a little introspective, right? And we think, what is the truth in this? Right? And sometimes it can be 100% true. Right? Someone's criticizing us and they're right. So we look back and we say, actually, they're right. And you come to the devotee and say, actually, Prabhu or Mati, you're right. Like that. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. And then we rectify the situation very quickly. Right? Or sometimes someone criticizes us, we step back, we have a look, and we say, okay, that's true. There's a small portion of that which is true. But largely, that's not what I was intending or not what I meant or, just not the way I am. So then you go to that devotee and you communicate. Right? And you say to that devotee, okay, sorry I've offended you, you feel offended, but that's not actually what I was intending. And, please forgive me and try to rectify the situation. So you see, Lord Shiva, he doesn't get all upset. Right? This is the most important thing to learn, because this is probably the main pastime of instruction in the Bhagavatam. You really have to honor and focus and learn from Lord Shiva on this. He's one of the 12 Mahajanas. Who are the 12 Mahajanas? Right? So you have Brahma, Shiva, Narada, Kapila, Kumaras, Yeah, Yamaraj, Prahlad, Bhishma, Janak, Shukadev. I think I've got most of them.
Bali
Maharaj. Good. Yeah. So there's 12 Mahajans. So the second Mahajan is Shiva, one of the great authorities, one of the 12 great authorities. And Lord Shiva, being one of the 12, he teaches us how to deal with Vaishnava Parad. He was silent. He didn't get involved in the whole thing. You know, someone criticized, right? They were criticizing him. At the time he was being criticized, he didn't even realize he was being criticized. Why? Because he was so absorbed in Krishna consciousness, right, meditating on Sankarsana, his worshipable deity. He didn't even realize what was going on. And then when he came out of trance and he realized that, you know, Daksha was feeling offended, then he thought, I have made a mistake. I did not respect Daksha as he wanted to be respected. I was neglectful. So he was ready to rectify. But everyone else became very infuriated. So then Daksha's group, they all started cursing. Who do you think you are? Like, these are powerful people. Right? So they get angry, and when they start saying things, things start happening. You know, it's mystical. It's like they speak something and then things begin to manifest. They're like very powerful. You know, what about this? And then, so then Shiva's group, they start saying the same thing. Who are you, Brahmanas? You're all, and then bang, curses are going back and forth. And then when Shiva realizes what is going on, you know, Lord Shiva, he just stands up and he's very quiet and he just walks away. I don't want to be involved in this. And that's how devotees feel. I don't want to be involved. You know, sometimes we hear this devotee's fighting with this devotee. We're just like, I don't really want to. You know, we can give some guidance or some instruction. If people are willing to hear from us, we can say something. But if everyone's going to get passionate or ignorant and start criticizing each other, then devotees just back off. We don't want to be involved in those kind of things. So we have to be very careful. So the basic instruction, the main instruction in this pastime, is you have to avoid Vaishnav aparad offences. So in the Skanda Purana, the Skanda Purana is by, or it is about Lord Shiva, actually, because he's also here in this pastime. It says there are six degrees or variations of Vaishnava aparad. Right? It goes from the most serious to the least serious. Okay, so we'll start with the most serious. Right? So there are six ways that you can offend a devotee. Right? The first is to kill a devotee. Right? If you kill a devotee, the devotee will probably feel quite offended. And Krishna will definitely be upset. So we recommend everyone who's sitting here today, please do not kill devotees. Okay. I mean, if you're really upset, but go and, you know, I don't know, smash the earth or something, or do something else. Go for a swim in the ocean and yell or something, or do something else, or do some karate or something. But, you know, don't kill his body. Please don't. Especially Mauritians, they get really worked up here. Just, it says it, look, don't kill. I know sometimes I say things and you get upset, but don't. Okay. Number two, don't blaspheme a devotee. Blaspheme means you criticize, but the criticism is not just. That's blasphemy. Right? If you're a senior devotee and you have to correct a junior devotee, that is not aparad. That is seva. Right? So therefore, but how we do it, that has to be seen as well, right? The way we say it. But that is not. But to blaspheme a devotee means the devotee, there is no fault, but you're giving some instruction, some criticism, and it is not just, that is aparad. Right? It means it's coming from envy. Right? It's where it's coming from. Because sometimes someone can say the most, a senior devotee can say to you the most cutting or the most painful thing, but it's coming from a place of actually of love, right? Of affection. Right? One time, Giriraj Maharaj, he said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, how should we feel Sometimes you criticize us or chastise us, and it's very difficult. When Prabhupada, we get chastised by someone in this world, but getting chastised by Prabhupada is like a different level of, chastise. Even Tamal Krishnamaraj, he said that to me one time. He was chastising us, and he said, what do you think it was like being chastised by Prabhupada? Mm-hmm. He said, you think I'm heavy? And he was heavy. I mean, he was very heavy. He said, what do you think it was like being chastised by Prabhupada? And it's another level. Prabhupada says something to you, it's like, it's powerful. And Guru Raj Maharaj said, how should we feel? Prabhupada said, you should feel fortunate that someone loves you and has affection for you. They will take the time to point out your faults and defects and help you. So that's how we should feel. Maybe it's not easy. We don't like it. The ego gets hurt. But that's how we should feel. But if it's coming from a place of envy, right, we're criticizing another devotee just because we're trying to bring that person down, right, then that's blasphemy. That's an upper rod. Right? Number three, to be envious of devotees, even you don't say anything, even you don't do anything, but just feeling like that, that's an upper rod. And that holds you back in your spiritual life. You can't progress. Right? If you always think, you have to analyze your own consciousness. Right? If you're always thinking negatively towards other devotees and being critical, and there's an internal dialogue going on in your mind, you can't chant properly. You're supposed to be chanting the Maha Mantra. You're thinking, that devotee, took the last piece of avocado yesterday at breakfast. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. I will kill them. if they breakfast this morning, they take the avocado. Krishna, Krishna. So this is, just to be envious of a devotee. Number four, one who fails to offer obeisances to Vaishnavas upon seeing them. So if you see a devotee and you do not offer obeisances, that is an aparad. It means we all live together. We see each other all day, every day. Right? So I haven't seen you for 5 minutes, and then I see you offering my obeisances. You didn't offer your obeisances to me like that. Then that's not upper right. But it means if you haven't seen a devotee for a long time, right? Sometimes we go away and devotee comes back or something, then you should offer obeisances to the devotee. It means that you offer respect. It says in the Shastra, if you see a sannyasi, right? If you see the sannyasi and you do not offer obeisances, all of your pious credits are gone. You lose your good fortune. Vaishnava etiquette means if you see a sannyasi and you offer obeisance, just say like Maharaj, he gave class this morning, right? So I walk in the courtyard, Maharaj is walking out, and he's walking that way. He doesn't see me, but I see him. I have to offer obeisances. But then if I stand up, I'm talking to someone in the courtyard, he turns around and sees me and kind of acknowledges he sees me. I have to offer obeisances a second time. Right? That's Vaishnava etiquette. Otherwise, he'll think, because I can think in my heart, I already offer obeisances to Maharaj, but he didn't see that. Right? So you have to do both. When you see them, when they see you. Right? Don't avoid that. Number five, one who becomes angry with a Vaishnava. So if we become angry towards another devotee unnecessarily, once again, if a senior devotee is angry with a junior devotee because the junior devotee has been acting improperly, that's not upper rod. But generally, we just become angry. Some devotees have anger control management, anger management issues. Right? We can't control our anger. Then you will offend devotees. You have to be very careful of these things. You can't say, well, I was just having a bad day. Okay, you're having a bad day, but in the meantime, you've offended devotees by speaking to them improperly. So you have to be very careful about becoming angry unnecessarily. And when we are a senior devotee and we're correcting a junior devotee, the anger has to be proportionate to the offense. Right? Okay, someone did something wrong, and then your anger comes down like Mount Meru on that person. What did you like that? That's not. It has to be proportionate. That's the point. Right? And then there's no offense. And then the sixth offense is one who does not become joyful upon seeing a devotee. So you just see a devotee, right? Especially after a long time, you haven't seen someone for a long time, and then you see them, and you're just kind of like, you know. Well, that does make the devotee feel very good, right? And sometimes it happens. Sometimes I do it to other devotees, and sometimes other devotees do it to me. It does make you feel very good. Yeah, I haven't seen you for a long time, and then I'm just like, oh. It doesn't make you feel very good. And then if the devotee carries a little bit of hurt in his heart, that's Vaishnava Parad. You've committed an offense, right? Rupa Goswami says in the Mathura Mando Mahatma, Mathura Dham Mahatma. There's one shastra he's written about Mathura Vrindavan. So he says at the very end, he says, be very careful about creating ill feelings in the hearts of the Vaishnavas. Be very careful. Right? Because if devotees have ill feelings towards you, it will hamper your spiritual advancement. You can be doing everything very nicely. You can be Mr. Pucker or Mrs. Pucker. You know, you can be very, you know. But if devotees are harboring ill feelings towards you, very difficult to advance in Krishna consciousness. And even Rupa Goswami, then he gives an example, his own example. He said, it happened to me. Rupa Goswami was chanting at Radhakund, I think. So he was chanting Hare Krishna. And he was so deep in his chanting, because he is Rupa Manjari, he's a Nitya Siddha devotee. So deep in the chanting, he was seeing Radha and Krishna, and some pastime was taking place, and he was smiling, and he was laughing. So then one devotee, while he was chanting, came to offer obeisances to him, and the devotee had a deformity, like a hunchback or something. He had some physical ailment. So he came, he offered obeisances to Rupa Goswami, and he got up, and Rupa Goswami, he went, like that. So then he thought he was like somehow ignoring him and laughing at him. And he thought, Rupa Goswami is not reciprocating with me. So he felt a little offended, and he went away. And then Rupa Goswami, his vision broke. His Leela Smaranam, his meditation of Radha Krishna, it broke. And then he thought, I can't. And then he tried to enter back into it, and he couldn't enter back into it. And then he realized something has gone wrong, because I can no longer see Radha and Krishna. So then he went to Sanatan Goswami, and he said, I was chanting, but then suddenly this happened. And Sanatan said he thought about it. And then Sanatan said, maybe you've offended someone, or maybe you did not receive someone, someone came to see you. So Rupa Goswami went to every devotee around Radha, every devotee, went and offered obeisances, Prabhuji, you know, please forgive me if I've done something. And everyone said, no, no, nothing is there. You are our guru. But then finally came to this one devotee, and the devotee said, well, I came to offer obeisances to you this morning, and then you were laughing at me, and you were... So, and Rupa Goswami said, no, 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 no. He said, I was chanting, I was meditating, something was taking place. He said, this was nothing to... He said, Prabhu, please... offered obeisances to the devotee, right? Rectified the situation. Right? So even if we don't joyfully look at a devotee, you see a devotee, right? And you're not happy to see the devotee, right? It means, okay, sometimes we're in a situation where we're having a serious conversation, you know, and then another devotee comes. And then they get, you know, so we all have to be a little sensible and a little. But in general, it means that you have to be careful with these things. The basic point of this pastime is be very careful how you deal with devotees and do not offend devotees. That's the basic point. If you offend devotees, your spiritual life will be hampered. It'll be very difficult. All right. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed. Yeah? In our tradition, it's called preeti. Priti means affection or love, like that. Priti. It says in the Upadeshamrita, in the Nectar of Instruction, right, it says Priti Lakshana. It's an ornament. Lakshana means like an ornament. So Priti means the ornament of affection. How do we show affection to devotees? There's six ways. Right. You give a gift and you receive a gift. That's how we show our affection. Yeah. We give prasad and we receive prasad. And then we reveal the mind in confidence and we inquire confidentially. So they're the six ways. It's called Priti Lakshana. That's how we show affection to devotees. Rupa Goswami says. So. Any other question?
What can we do to improve our chanting?
Say it again.
What can we do to improve our chanting? I already asked last time.
How what?
I already asked last time.
How can we? What can we do to improve our chanting?
Yeah.
No, the first thing you can do is stay awake. If you stay awake, your chanting will be a lot better. I have experience. I've experienced this. Yeah, when I'm awake, my chanting's a lot better. So the main thing is to be attentive while chanting. That's the main thing. That's like, you can say, the foundation, like when you build a building, the foundation has to be solid. So if you want to go to advanced chanting, right, then the foundation. So the foundation is attentiveness. Means you're attentive while you're chanting. Means when you're chanting, that's what you're doing, you're chanting. Right? You're not, you know, folding the washing. You know, I'm talking about your japa, like your 16 rounds, your vow. When we're doing all other things, kirtaniya ha sadahari, we can chant all the time. But when you're doing your actual chanting, what we call our japa or our vow, right, 16 rounds or whatever it is, then that's all we're doing at that time. We're not driving the car. Right, we're not reading the service roster outside the temple room. Right, sometimes the devotees sitting there chanting, they're reading the service roster. That's not chanting. That's called reading the service roster. Right, so you're doing, what are you doing? Doing that or that? Right, just like on Radhashtami. Right, when I chant on Radhashtami, I get the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And teachings of Lord Chaitanya, there are 25 qualities of Srimati Radharani. So I get the book, right? And then I read one quality and then I chant. And I try to meditate on that quality while I'm chanting. Right? Then I read the second quality. And do that. So I was up at New Govardhan on Radhashtami. Right? And then I sat down in the morning and I had the book and then I did. So I read it and then I started chanting like that. And devotee sitting next to me, he said, "Are you reading or chanting?" And I thought, that's a nice instruction. Are you doing one or are you doing the other? So I said, "Prabhu, I read one quality and then I chant and meditate on that." So he thought I was just like, you know, reading and chanting. It's like, you're reading the next purport. So that's not chanting. Right? That's not attentive. Right? So you do one or you do the other. Right? You don't do both. So that's the first thing. If you do that, if you get the basis, then you can go higher. Then it says in Madhurya Kanambini, Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur says, bhakti, everything we do is bhakti, it's devotion. Bhakti is like a dance teacher. Right? So you're learning how to dance. Right? And then you have a teacher. So your teacher says, do like this, you do like that. Your teacher says, do like this, you do. And that's how you learn. So bhakti is our dance teacher. So as we advance in Krishna consciousness from within the heart, Bhakti Devi will guide you or instruct you how to chant in a more elevated way. And by hearing from advanced devotees and associating with advanced devotees, you will learn how to hear and how to chant in a more advanced way. Just like the last time I saw my Guru Maharaj, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, I stayed with him in Oxford in England. And I was very fortunate because he let me chant japa with him every morning. It was just me and him. And he had a temple room. And his temple room was about from me to you. It was like just a little room like that, tiny little room. And he had life-size Prabhupada and a big Tulsi plant. She's about this big. So it's like Tulsi's there, Prabhupada's there, and he had pictures of the acharyas, and he had his deities of Gaudiya, which are now at Govardhan Hill. The big deities and Prabhupada, and just this little, like a bhajan kutia. And I was in there with him, you know. So then I learned a lot about chanting from just being with my guru in that, you know, how to chant. And he gave me instructions and he did different things. And before he would chant, he would have a picture of the holy Dham. So he'd put every day he'd have a different picture. And he'd put the picture there, and then while he was chanting, he was meditating on the picture. Right? And before he would chant, he would sit and read for about 5 or 10 minutes from Chaitanya Charitamrita or some of the books by some of the writings of Raghunath Das Goswami. So he would read and then he would chant, meditate. Like that. So he taught me things, how to deepen my chanting. So when you're ready, right, then advanced devotees will guide and instruct you. If you feel like you need more instruction, you go to advanced devotees and say, you know, please instruct me, what do I do now? My Guru Maharaj said to me, actually, he said, you should read these literatures which describe the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. He gave me that instruction. So he said, you read these things, right? And then while you're chanting, these things will become amalgamated with the holy name. The holy name, right? Nama, Rupa, Guna, Lila, right? The name, the form, the qualities and the pastimes, they begin to merge as you become advanced in chanting. Right? So as you're becoming advanced, then from nama comes rupa. Then you meditate on Krishna's form, right? The details of Krishna's form. And then when you become more advanced in chanting, you meditate on his qualities. And when you become more advanced, then the pastime or the lila begins to. Right? So this is not beginning chanting, but this is where it leads to. So you have to cultivate these things. So according to your level, you have to take the next step, the next step, the next step, the next step. So you get guidance. You go to advanced devotees and you ask them, you know, I'm doing this. Like you say, I want to advance in my chanting. They'll say, what are you doing now? Right? You explain what you're doing, then they'll say, okay, now you do this and go to the next step. Is that okay? In the beginning, you must be attentive. If you're not attentive, then nothing's going to work. Okay. You want to ask anything further?
Yeah, how to be more attentive? Like I know I sit on one spot and I come for a longer life. Say, Vida, the mind gets tired and then the mind goes everywhere.
Yeah, so Krishna says, when dealing with the mind, in chapter 6 of the Bhagavad Gita, he says, Abhyas and Vairagya. Right? Vairagya means detachment. In other words, don't entertain the mind. The mind is going to give you the same nonsense every day. Like I've been a devotee for, you know, a number of years now. The mind just gives me the same stuff it was giving 20, 30 years ago. Same. There's that again. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. Again, okay, thank you. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Same old thing. We're meditating on the same stuff we're meditating on years ago. Right? So vairagya. And abhyas means practice. So you have to practice bringing them. I mean, if you practice controlling the mind, eventually you become good at it. And my Guru Maharaj told me that many years ago. He said, if you stick at something, eventually you'll achieve it. So if you're finding it hard to eat, then practice again and again. And with determination, gradually it does become easier. And then it becomes to a point where your mind isn't such a problem. I mean, you can chant, you can control it, because you have a taste, nama ruchi, you have a taste for chanting. So just by practicing and by detachment then.
Okay.
It's okay.
That's good.
Anything else you need?
That's okay.
Okay. Thank you. Please come again.
Because you don't like the whole philosophy.
Yeah. See, the interesting thing is Prabhupada never said don't listen to the pastimes. And sometimes it's actually improper instruction, because I hear this. Devotees say to other devotees, don't hear the pastimes, hear philosophy, because you're not ready yet. Actually, that's not the way Prabhupada taught us. Prabhupada gave the Krishna book in 1970. All right, so you look at ISKCON. How old was ISKCON in 1970? 5 years old, right? Prabhupada gave the Krishna book. What's the Krishna book? It's Krishna's pastimes. So Prabhupada didn't give the Krishna book in 1970 and say, okay, don't read it. Right? You can read the Krishna book in 2018. Okay, I'll give it to you now, but just don't touch it. Right? No, Prabhupada said you should read it every day before you go to sleep, and then at night time you would dream about Krishna. So the point is, because we're new devotees, we're all new devotees, right? There should be a balance. It means you shouldn't just read about Krishna's pastimes. Right? No, you shouldn't just read about it. It means you should study the philosophy. You should be reading the Bhagavad Gita. You know, first time I met my Guru Maharaj, he gave me 5 books to read. First time I met him, he said, you read these 5 books. Right? And he meant at once. You know, not like, you know, one and the other like that. He said, read the first canto of the Bhagavad Gita, the Krishna book, the Prabhupada Lilamrita, the Bhagavad Gita, and the Nectar of Devotion. Right? And he said, read these books. Right? So, it's not that we should not read Krishna's pastimes, but you must be mainly reading the philosophy. It's not like you read the philosophy for 10 years, then you go to a senior devotee, oh Prabhu, can I please pick up the Krishna book now? You know, Prabhupada never said that. You can read the Krishna book right now, but you must be reading the Bhagavad Gita simultaneously. That's the point. Okay.
How do you
keep
individual emotions that you have with Krishna? Obviously, everybody is not on the same level of divinity, on the higher level of divinity. Where do you keep your individual idea? Like, that this is what kind of emotion I have with Krishna. But obviously, you're following a basic principle, basic chanting.
Emotion means?
Emotion, what I like to do. Not like, it's not like I want to do this, but obviously you're following what they are saying. But at the same time, you're doing something which is not agreeable to them.
It's not what?
Which they don't agree with that.
The devotee?
Yes. Right?
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Because I do hear this, and I think it needs to be addressed. You've got they are your senior devotees, but there's more senior devotees than them. And those senior devotees are saying, I've heard this recently, and it's actually not correct. They're giving this instruction, but it's not correct. They're saying, don't read Krishna's pastimes. Prabhupada never says, don't read Krishna's pastimes. You can read Krishna's pastimes, I'm telling you now, based on Prabhupada's authority. You can read Krishna's pastimes, but you have to read it along with the philosophy. I just said, you read the Bhagavad Gita and the Krishna book. Right? You read the Bhagavad Gita in the day and Krishna book at night. That's what Prabhupada's instruction was. So when devotees, because I've heard this recently, and it's incorrect, don't read Krishna's pastimes, then what are we supposed to do? I'm a Hare Krishna now. I shave my head, I put on tilak, I wear a dhoti. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Sorry, Krishna, I have to ignore you at the moment, but Hare Krishna, I can't read about you. Hare Krishna. It doesn't even make sense. So it means those devotees, it means they don't have sufficient realization. That's actually what it means. How do you know who is advanced? Arjuna says to Krishna at the end of the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, he says, how do I know if someone is a transcendentalist? And then Krishna says 4 things, right? How they speak, how they walk, how they sit, and the language they use. Right? So then Prabhupada says, Arjuna says to Krishna, how do I understand if someone's advanced? Right? First thing Krishna says, how do they speak? Right? And then Prabhupada says in the purport, as soon as someone opens their mouth, you know how advanced they are. Right? So you just listen. Sometimes, I meet a new devotee, like someone who's not initiated yet, like a new But when I hear them speaking their realizations about Krishna, I think, oh, this story is quite advanced. Now they have realization. So how advanced do we know? As soon as someone speaks, you know. You can only tell how advanced someone is up until the level you're on. Right? So if you're on this level, you can understand everything up until there. You can't understand as much about what goes beyond. You can to a degree, but you know, only so much. So who is advanced then? You see. Okay. Any other question?
Yes. Today this again Raghunatha Goswami, Raghunatha Goswami and Vishnudas Agarwal. Can you tell something about
it? I haven't got time, but the only thing we can say is that the three of them, they disappeared on the same day, but in different years. So they disappeared on the Ekadashi, even though in the Titi the Ekadashi was yesterday, but they actually disappeared on the Ekadashi. And if you go to Radhakund, they all lived at Radhakund. And they all disappeared in different years, but on this day. So at Radhakund today, or yesterday, there's a huge festival in honor of these three devotees. And Indra Prabhu, when he was on the planet, he used to go every year on that day to Radhakund, and he would sponsor a big feast for all the Vaishnavas. So I haven't got time to say much more.
What is the name Mahavishnu for the guest that comes during the day? There's a big scoff at the end of the day. Each alpha and there's no Vishnu for anybody that comes around.
During the day?
Yeah. They used to keep it in the fridge, you know.
Because you're not in the kitchen cooking for Krishna.
I never cook.
Any other questions? Comments?
Just a concern to this question.
Yeah.
So, when Prabhupada lecture, he mentioned about that if someone wants to read Bhagavatam, do it in a systematic reading, not just jump onto the 10th canto. And if you want to read about the pastime, I have been the Krishna book, so you read Krishna. So, when we talk about the pastime, and
it means what you mean by directly going to the 10th canto.
I mean,
so
reading,
it means.
Any,
yeah, okay, if you're reading Prabhupada's books, right, and you start reading the 10th canto, that's not correct. You should go from the first canto, make your way to the 10th canto. That's the correct system. So that's
I mean, the person who's not read the first 9 cantos, and
yeah.
He wants to read about Krishna.
Yeah, I mean, he can read 10th canto also, but he has to be reading first canto simultaneously. Yeah. Right. It doesn't mean, you know, Prabhupada never gave a rule, you can't touch the 10th canto until you finish the other 9 cantos, but simultaneously, okay, you might be reading the 10th canto, but you have to be reading canto 1, 2, 3, 4 systematically also. Both have to be there. It's not like there's a rule, do not touch the 10th canto. But there's a conversation actually, Prabhupada said, we do not boycott the gopis. So we're saying, oh, gopi, you can't touch the gopis, they pass it. No, Prabhupada said, we do not boycott the gopis. But you have to, as Prabhupada said, you have to read systematically. He says that in the introduction to the Bhagavatam. He said, you must read the book systematically. Right? Okay, while you're reading the first canto, if you want to go to the 10th canto and read something, that's okay. But if you're only doing that, you're a new devotee and you're only doing that, it means actually there's something wrong. No, it means because you haven't followed, you know, you haven't got all the anattas out of the heart. No, you just say, I just want to read 10th canto, I just want to read 10th canto. Then, you know, you have attraction to the opposite sex, you have so many things. 10th canto is actually for Paramahamsa. It means when you're liberated from the... Like that. Yes, sir.
I just want to add to your question. Actually, Krishna book is 10th canto. The stories are all 10th canto. So if you're reading Krishna book, it is 10th canto. But of course, there's a systematic way. But at the same time, like you said, you read the Bhagavad Gita and you read Krishna book. So you're not jumping to Bhagavatam directly by Bhagavatam from the first canto. But you can read Krishna book, which is part of Bhagavatam. But Srila Prabhupada, every time he's putting his commentary in the Krishna book, how we should not imitate. He says, perfect. His purpose are there. So it's not like you're going to be confused. And you can read Krishna book, but you've got that idea, because Prabhupada is explaining it nicely.
Yeah, no, very good. Very nice. Yeah, so you need to do things under guidance, that's the point. If you don't know, but you know, the instructor, because I am hearing this at the moment, you know, some devotees saying, don't touch Krishna's pastimes, so you've read all the philosophy. Prabhupada didn't say that. Yeah, and devotees are saying that, senior devotees like within this community, more senior than these devotees, and they're saying that, but Prabhupada never said that. It's an improper understanding, actually. As Prabhupada said, the Krishna book is there, you should read it. You know, I've probably read the Krishna book probably about 10 times. Yeah, I've gone through it 10 times, you know, read it, the whole thing. So, you know, I'm trying to understand Krishna's pastimes from that perspective. And now I'm teaching the 10th canto here in the temple in our course. You know, but that's after studying Prabhupada's commentary in the Krishna book many, many, many times. Right. Now we'll go to like the next. So, in a point.
Why is it in the Krishna book that Prabhupada left out the 33rd chapter of Bhagavad?
He didn't leave out the 33rd chapter.
I think so. Last time I was reading Krishna book, I noticed like this Krishna book I had, there was the 33rd chapter was missing.
No, it's not missing. It's all there. He didn't leave out anything. He didn't leave out any chapter. Why would Prabhupada leave it out?
Has under.
No, he didn't. 33rd chapter was there. I don't know. But I mean, I've read the Krishna book. It's all there. 33rd chapter was there. So.
Probably. Should Prabhupada give any recommendation to read a book like, say, for example, Chaitanya Bhagavat to maybe find some evidence or anything like that?
Yeah, you can read Chaitanya Bhagavat, that's all. Chaitanya Bhagavat. When Prabhupada translated Chaitanya Charitamrita, he actually, there's a conversation with his disciples, and he actually said, what should I translate? Chaitanya Bhagavat or Chaitanya Charitamrita? And one devotee said Chaitanya Bhagavat, and the other devotee said Chaitanya Charitamrita. And then for whatever reason Prabhupada said I'll translate the Chaitanya Charitamrita. That's what he chose, but he was actually considering doing Chaitanya Bhagavat. They're both equally as important in one sense like that. But so you can read both, you can read anything you want as long as you're reading Prabhupada's books the most. Right? You read Prabhupada's books, that's what I do. Like mainly I read Prabhupada's books, and then there's so many books, you know, there's Radha Krishna, Ganadesh Deepika, so unlimited books. There's Ujjwala Nilamani, there's, you know, books that go, Brihad Bhagavatamrita, that wasn't commented by Prabhupada. These are like essential books. So we can read all of these books, but Prabhupada's books must be, it's like when you take prasadam, so you have the main prasad, and then at the end you have some sweets. So do you eat more sweets or more savoury? You eat savoury. No, I eat more sweets, but you know. But you eat more, so, and then you have a bit of sweet at the end. So it's like that. Mainly you read Prabhupada's books, and then okay, you can read a bit of this and that. You know, Prabhupada never said we could not read the books of the previous acharya. He never said that. So, anything else? I'm going to stop here because we're getting late now. So if you have anything else to add, then. Srila Prabhupada ki.